you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Yes, it is the Sixers Talk podcast brought to you by Wilmington University. WilmU Works. Glad to be with you once again. Danny Pommels, the level-headed one, Paul Hudrick here as usual, as well as our esteemed producer and co-host, Ben Berry. Gentlemen, the Sixers 3-1 in the Orlando bubble, but somehow it doesn't quite feel like 3-1 as since we last talked to you guys, Ben Simmons has for all intents and purposes, a knee injury is what we'll say. We do not know the extent of it, how long he'll be out, what exactly are the ramifications of him being out. We'll discuss and think about some of the parameters of how the Sixers survive this thing until he can get back, because they're not the same team without their best defender. That's easy to see. But here they are winning games nonetheless against teams they should beat, but doing so in not quite the manner you think. Guys, how are you feeling right now as the Sixers heading to this next few games where, you know, suddenly we're thinking an entirely different thing about this team than we were a few days ago?
I know we say a win is a win and, you know, an ugly win, it's still a win. But, man, they have been four ugly games. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. I mean, it's four ugly games. I'm glad that they stopped, you know, allowing 40 points in the fourth quarter of the last two games, especially against Orlando. They really clamped down in the fourth quarter. I don't know how many Orlando, what did they had 22 in the fourth quarter tonight. So, you know, two games in a row, they actually did a decent job in the fourth, but just ugly, man, like ugly. Like it just doesn't instill much confidence. I mean, I got to be honest, it just doesn't. Like you're watching that game and through three quarters, it was not pretty at all. Orlando's a team that, they play really good defense. They don't turn the ball over, and they don't foul. So that was a really bad combination for the Sixers, and you saw it in the first half. You know, Joel Embiid, I thought, settled way too much. Tobias Harris really struggled out of the gate, couldn't hit. I think he was 4 or 14 in the first half. So they kind of played the way the Magic wanted them to play in the first half, and that's why the score was what it was. Then in the third quarter, Joel turns it up. You get a great contribution from Alec Burks. And so, I mean, that the crux of it is, to me, the Joel Embiid that we saw through the first three games and then in the second half against the Magic, he's got to be that guy for however many minutes he's on the floor for all of these games, especially with Ben Simmons out. He's got to be that guy every night, every minute on the floor if they want to have any chance to win.
You guys are hip-hop fans. When I watch this game, I think of Pusher's T's ad-lib. Yeah. When I watch the Sixers in this bubble, what I see is Pusher T's ad-lib.
Yeah.
They won that game on sheer talent against the Magic, who were without Aaron Gordon and Jonathan Isaac. They won on sheer talent. That cut it against the Magic. That's not going to work against the Celtics, the Raptors. We saw that it's not going to work against the Pacers. They got to get it together. I know Ben's out. Joel came on strong in the second half. That first half was ugly. Paul just touched on Tobias. He was 8 of 21 for the game. Yeah, he chipped in with 20-plus points, but it was on 44% shooting. That's not getting it done. Josh Richardson, we talked about it before the pod. I think he continued an abysmal season. I think you guys are a little higher on him than I am, but 2-12 shooting, it just doesn't look like he belongs out there. They gave up 89 points in the first two games. They came back with a better performance against the Wizards. But, I mean, Friday's performance against the Magic, it was lackluster. There is nothing this team has given me to make me want to even believe, to make me want to believe that they merit to be on the same plateau, the same level as the Bucks, as the Raptors, as the Celtics, and the rest of the teams in the East. It's not pretty.
On top of it, they just haven't been fun to watch, which is disappointing. Like, the first game was fun because Joel was so dominant, and they gave up way too many points to T.J. Warren. But at least that was fun because Joel had 40 and 20, and at times he looked ridiculous, and, like, it was fun. But the last three games, to me, just haven't been – there's just been – like, even, like, tonight, I was watching for a second, like, oh, my goodness. Like, and I kind of felt like they were still going to win that game. Like, I felt like at some point they were going to get it together, and just the size. And, like, Ben, like you already said, like, Magic are missing Aaron Gordon and Jonathan Isaac, so they're really small. And so I felt like at some point they were just going to take the game over and win it, but, man, just not fun. And that's disappointing to me because say what you want about them throughout the season. Yeah, they underperformed, but at least they had a bunch of games where it was like they had like, they beat the Milwaukee Bucks on Christmas. They beat the Clippers at home. They had that big game against the Lakers where they won. Like, there was fun moments. Like, it just hasn't been fun through four games.
I think the thing that is the theme of the lack of fun is what the moments that we've seen from the entire season is like the fit just doesn't quite seem to be there. And they tried to remedy that fit by putting Al Horford on the bench and putting Shake Milton in the starting lineup. And unfortunately, Ben Simmons' injury has forced Al Horford back into the starting lineup. But it seems to work better when Ben and Al are together and when Ben and Joel are together, but it doesn't seem to work good when all three of them are on the floor together. You know what I mean? Like, it works also with Horford and Embiid to some extent, but it doesn't work when all three of them are on the floor together. And I think that's the thing that kind of like makes it a little disjointed, because Josh is also kind of an odd man out because he's not quite fitting in as well. Do you guys see that the same way? Like, do you see that the lack of cohesion there?
Definitely. And I think the numbers bear that out when you look at the net rating of those lineups with those three guys in it, just not as good. I mean, the Horford and Bede one was really bad during the regular season. It's actually been okay. I mean, it's really small sample size, but it's been okay through three games in the bubble.
Give him credit for that.
Yes. And and we talked about it before the podcast, Andy. What this is proving to me is Al Horford can still play a little bit. Like, this isn't a guy – like, there are people that were basically saying, like, he's washed, he's done. This guy can still play a little bit. It is, like you said, Danny, the fit is just not good. What Elton Brand saw was, hey, this Al Horford, he shot 38% from three the last 3 years in Boston. We plug him in, we're going to have him sit on the outside and play like a stretch four. In theory, I guess that's – sure, that is fair, kind of makes sense. But when you see it practically – you have basically four guys struggling to try to get – like, Tobias wants to be in the post sometimes. Ben wants to be in the post. Al wants to be in the post. And, of course, Joel needs to be in the post. So you have all these guys kind of fighting for that real estate that isn't very big. And then on top of that, it's just, you know, even now, Danny, if you think about the starting lineup and you think about Ben playing the four – that's Al Horford. That's where he was good with the Celtics. He was that point four because he is an excellent passer for a big man. So that was kind of Al Horford's role in Boston. So, like, now with Ben out, and if you play Al and Joel together, Al can take that role over. And you saw that. He played that little high-low action with Joel, and it works out pretty well. But, yeah, I mean, I was worried about the offense fit. I actually have to give credit to Brian Brennan, our great Sixers pre- and post-producer, because I remember when they made that signing, when the Sixers signed, or maybe even when there were rumors that they were going to sign Horford, I said, oh, I'm worried about the fit with Joel. He said, I'm worried about the fit with Ben Simmons. And I think you're kind of seeing that come to fruition, where I think they kind of want to play the same role. So I'm very intrigued to see how it's all going to work when Ben's healthy. But again, I think the biggest thing I'm taking away is I think Al Horford is still a pretty damn good basketball player.
Paul, you just brought up something, and shout out to Brian. I never thought of that Ben and Al playing the same role, or that's where they could both excel at. I just thought when they signed Horford last year, it's not going to work. You need to surround both of the – especially if they're on the floor at the same time with shooters. need to surround.
So you thought it was Joel a bad signing from the giddy-up?
Yeah. You got three centers, and the best one shoots 30% from the three, and it's Joel Embiid this season.
Oh, Ben is a center too?
The way he shoots, yeah. I mean, maybe that's harsh.
I thought it was a good signing. I thought it helped alleviate the backup minutes that they needed to fill with Joel, and it helped with a guy who had been playoff tested. I was excited about the signing.
And in fairness, defensively, it's worked out. Defensively, they're rating together, the three of them defensively, is excellent. It's an offense where it's been a disaster. But defensively, which is what they had in mind, it has worked out. Just
defensively, it's been amazing. Offensively, it's been a disaster game after game. You got to surround Joel with shooters. Even when you surround Ben with shooters, it works. This team is more talented than the team two years ago with J.J. Redick, Covington, and Sarge. But those three guys were better shooters, at least from beyond the arc, than Richardson, Horford, and Tobias are at this point in time. So it spaced it out and worked more. I don't know. I don't need to see any much more from those guys all on the court at the same time. Brett, do something with the lineup. Mix it up a little bit more. I know Ben's injured. We're throwing Al back out there. But I don't need to see anything of it. I think that was Danny's original question for this point. It doesn't work. It's not going to work. We can't force it to work anymore. Maybe if it's the end of game and we're trying to defend the three or just on the defensive end for a last shot. But those three do not need to be on the court for any more than 3 minutes in the entire game at the same time.
Hey, dreams come into reach at Wilmington University. There's a local university that's ready to bring your dreams into reach. It's Wilmington University. WilmU helps working adults reach their career goals through accredited and affordable degrees and certificates to reach new heights in your field. WilmU works. Find out why at wilmu.edu. Yeah, I think that's kind of the point of Brett putting Shake into the starting lineup, because he's admitted that, you know, it's just not going to work with the three of them in there together. But you do mention the rotation. You mention the minutes. And we have a game here with Alec Burks, and who not only this game, but throughout the entire what was he? Was he 8 of 9 from three? Like, I think he hadn't missed a three until this game. That is a fact. So I think the point is with Alec Burks is you look at where Brett has him in the rotation, how he's fitting in, and credit to him for being ready to go. You know, wherever and whenever he gets put into the game, and whether it's running the point guard, playing the off guard, you see Alec Burks excelling. But why is it that he's so far behind other players on the bench, and theoretically wouldn't have got as much of an opportunity here if Ben wasn't hurt? So that kind of gives me a little bit of pause when I think about, you know, these playoff rotations. And maybe even, you know, still Glenn Robinson III is out with a hip pointer. Alec Burks might even not be getting this much time, even if Ben was hurt, if Glenn Robinson III was in the rotation. So not an embarrassment of riches, that's not the right way to put it, but Brett has some decisions to make on that bench. But I don't have confidence that he's been pulling the right strings when I see guys like Alec Burks look so rock steady and him – having, you know, a little bit of disjointedness in where he fits in the rotation and the minutes that he's getting and why he's playing behind other guys like, Howell Nettle maybe or Furkan Korkmaz.
See, I'm not sure I agree with that assessment, because I think Brett has liked Alec Burks. I think he liked Alec Burks. Like, he talked him up an awful lot to us during his media sessions, whether it was in the scrimmages or during the things. I think that he knows what he's getting from Alec Burks, right? He's a veteran. He's been around. You know exactly what you're getting. So he wanted to see, hey, let me put Furkan Korkmaz out there. Hey, let me put Matisse Thybulle out there. Hey, let me put, you know, I think he was looking for things to see what he could get out of other guys, because he knows he's got Alec Burks. And now he's seeing through four games now, hey, our offense stinks. We can't
four
get anything.
Four games from the postseason. How long was he going to wait? How long was he going to have them in golf balls?
It's four games. It's not like he waited till – it's not the playoffs, Danny. It's the fourth game. He waited till the fourth game, and now Alec Burks played 30 minutes tonight, and he had a huge role. And I don't think it's just because of Ben Simmons. I think this has been gaining steam. I think this was something that was going to happen anyway because, and we've already talked about the struggles of Josh Richardson. That's a guy that they're counting on to try to score some points to try to be a pick and roll ball handler, and it hasn't worked out. So who do you go to? You go to a guy like Alec Burks who can do that. And not only that, we were talking before about, you know, if Shake were to go down, who would be the guy? And I said it's Alec Burks because I think that's the guy who's your secondary ball handler. So I don't think it's a matter of, oh, well, Brett was gonna play for – and then not only that, look at the minutes. Like, Furkan may be the first guy off the bench, but he's not playing – he's not even playing 20 minutes. Like, he's not playing a ton. So, I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily the way you worded it. I don't think it's a matter of, oh, Alec Burks is behind all these people. I think it's – Brett knew what he had in him, and he was waiting to see if maybe someone else would take a role or step up. And now that they're not, okay, I'm going to ride Alec Burks.
But it sounds like if those players that Brett was playing were to take a role and step up, Burks would still be on the bench, where I think that's a mistake.
Not
like,
on the bench, but he wouldn't be on the bench. You know, he would still get time. It's not like he was going to get – he played. He's played in all four games so far. He's gotten at least – I don't know his lowest minute total, but he's played in every game so far. So it's not like he wouldn't have played. But, yeah, if Furkan Korkmaz was shooting the lights out, Furkan Korkmaz would be getting the minutes, but because Alec Burks, it's what you wanted, Danny. It's a competition. You wanted it to be a meritocracy and these guys that earn minutes. Alec Burks is earning minutes.
I get that.
So he's playing.
I get
that's
that.
The way it works.
But what my eyes are telling me is that when I see the rotations and where guys are playing and when they're playing, it doesn't quite seem like, okay, Brett may be feeling it out, but part of being the coach is pulling the right strings at the right times and being able to massage the lineup and things like that. And yeah, there's an art to that. And I'm there's an art and a science to it. And Brett is trying to figure it out. But I feel like when I look at the games and the times where players get in, I know Furkan is going to be the first player off the bench, whatever the situation may be. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But if Alec Burks is as steady as you say and Brett knows what he has with him, then, credit to Brett. You're giving him a lot of credit that I don't feel like he deserves.
I'm not even giving him a lot of credit. It's also, too, if you look at Alec Burks' career, and I like Alec, don't get me wrong.
We were on the same page, yeah.
And I think he should have a big role. And maybe I agree with you that maybe it should have just been big right from the bat, but I'm trying to look at it from a devil's advocate perspective. But, yeah, I mean, but also we have to accept the reality, too, of Alec Burks, of what he is, right? I mean, there's a reason why Golden State
he's got a journeyman.
Him for the
better. Yeah, a reason there's why he hasn't stuck anywhere. Yeah,
exactly. There's a reason why. And he's streaky. He's a streaky kind of player. So right now he's playing lights out. I don't know that he's going to keep playing at this exact level every single night. So Brett is going to have to feel it out. And there's going to be nights where Alec's going to struggle from the field. And when that happens – then maybe you try to go with Furkan. You see if he can get hot. Like
I know you want to jump in, Ben. This is my final thought, but not to interrupt you, Paul. I just feel like it's even the decision making. When he has the ball in his hands, I see like a rock steady, you know, a decision maker, someone who can, you know, feel the defense out and make the right pass or might play or hold on to the ball longer, things like that, and avoid turnovers, which this team is plagued by for years and years and years. So when I see those things in his combo guard nature, I'm like, man, like, you know, this guy offers a lot. So why isn't he seeing more playing time just so Brett can feel the lineup out when this dude is sitting there in mothballs?
But he's not mothballs. He's still playing. It's not like he's on the back of the bench not playing a single minute. He was in the rotation from the get-go playing. So it's not like he was just not playing at all.
He's deep down the bench, though, bro. I mean, there's at least four – three guys that come off the bench before
you are putting way too much emphasis on when guys come into the game and how they come in. It's also about lineups. It's about
this team struggles with momentum, though. They struggle with momentum.
And here's the thing, too. Alec Burks was a good three-point shooter this season. He wasn't an elite three-point shooter this season. It's only in Disney World that he has been elite. He's been knocking down everything.
That's why I just made the point about when the ball's in his hands, I feel more – he's making sounder decisions.
Because the Sixers don't have anybody that's like that. But also, again, what we were looking at as fans and what Brett Brown was looking for, he was looking for Josh Richardson to do some of that. He was hoping that Shake and Ben would get that two-man game going, which obviously isn't going to happen now. And those things haven't come to fruition the way that we all thought. So Alec Burks has played well. Alec
Superman Kate. Hits. Alec Burks, here he comes.
I mean, for their sake, I hope he keeps the cape on, but we'll see. I mean, and like I said, I like the guy, but he is streaky. He's got a reputation for being streaky.
You guys done? I mean, I was wildly entertained, so you didn't have to stop on my behalf. I don't know what to add, because any side I could have taken has already been took. So let me just say this. Sixers ain't going anywhere. So, Brett, end the season early so we all can and go back to our summer routine, get our Flyers jersey on, because it seemed like the Flyers are closer to a championship.
Yeah, they look legit.
Yeah, they look legit. This was supposed to be the Sixers' year. The Flyers came out of nowhere. No, Brett, start Neto. Put Neto.
Quinn, Norvell Powell.
Kyler Quinn. Put over. All of them. The guy from
get
the Australian
Mariel
team.
Out there. Let's see what Mariel can do.
Get them out there so we can get this over. A sweep in the first round so we all go on about our lives. I know I'm not supposed
careful,
to do that.
Be careful what you wish for, because they might not even have those guys out there and get knocked out of the first round. So they might not even need to go that deep down the bench. But
if they got the big names out there and they get knocked in the first round, he needs to update that resume, and I'll update mine to send it in for his job as a Sixers coach. And I'll be bad at it.
What have you seen? You look at this whole thing, man. I think the odd man out, and credit to Tobias Harris, man, for as much as he stepped up, as much as guys like Tobias and Joel have stepped up, you continue to see Josh Richardson just not be inconsistent and just not be, not that he was a replacement for Jimmy Butler. He is the player.
He's not good. Why do we keep going down this alley? He's not good.
Go there with it? Like, dang, I can't even set it up. Like, can I set it up?
No, you can't set it up. Like, how many times have we done this? I know Paul's on a different side of this than me. He's not good.
He's under team control, so he's going to be here.
There are two ends of the floor, just so everyone knows. You play offense and you play defense. So, first of all, let me get that out of the way. To say he's not good is just – blatantly wrong, because he is at worst a good defender, if not very good at times defender, and he has been. He is a good defender. He actually defended T.J. Warren better than Ben Simmons did the other night, which, no one could guard T.J. Warren. Apparently no one could guard him in the bubble in general. But start with that. Josh Richardson can play defense. He's a good
Except
defender.
Except Mikal Bridges, apparently. Just let me throw that out there.
Mikal Bridges, hey, man. That trade looks worse by
Suns
the day.
Suns are 4-0. What?
Devin Booker, baby's my guy. Yeah, how about you see that thing with Draymond?
I did. We could talk about that too if you want. Wow. He also commented on Embiid and talked about, the TNT guys love to talk about Embiid's sluggishness and how he looks on the floor. It's just funny, because they don't obviously watch all the Sixers games, and when the games they do watch, Embiid, they kind of play down to the competition, so it exacerbates like some of his flaws and things like that. But we could finish this thought and get into that for sure.
Yeah, no, but with Josh, I'll agree that he has been not good. Offensively, he has really struggled through four games, and he's not done. But I think it's fair to point out, when you look at stretches during the season when he was healthy, there were stretches where he carried the offense. And I'm not
exaggerating.
You're
right, man. The Clippers game.
That Clippers game in that fourth quarter. He ended the game against one of the best teams in the NBA, defensive teams in the NBA.
But Janet Jackson closed that thing out. It's what have you done for me lately. So
we're here in the bubble. I will not argue that he is
putting
not
up four
he
point
is,
games and five yeah, point
disappointing.
Games.
Disappointing. Very, very, very disappointing through four games in the bubble.
And even more, because there's opportunity there. There is opportunity here for someone to step up and be as advertised, and he has not.
I've made it to a point in life where I've met someone that will put a cape on, save Josh Richardson's reputation against my vitriol. Yes.
Listen, man.
Paul's level-headed, bro. He's going to give you the facts, man. That's just what he is, bro.
I got no biases. I see what I see, and I say what I see. That's it.
Toe bias.
Not more
no biases, but toe
bias.
Listen, you mentioned the Draymond thing. Joel, Draymond was on the TNT show and taking Shaq's place. So it was Kenny, EJ, Chuck, and Draymond. And, I think the overarching thing Draymond said is the fact that no one in the league can stop Joel from getting to a spot he wants to get to, and that he bails his defenders out every time he takes a jump shot, because he, if he asserts himself, he can just control the paint like no one else can. And we've seen that. I mean, we all can have our opinions on what Joel is. I don't think this was a really great microcosm. You know, not that they were picking on him, but, you know, he had coming off a 40-20 game. He's obviously
the first timing.
Yeah, first team all bubble at this point in these first four games. Like, he's definitely been one of the top players there. But I think Draymond's points do have some merit, because, and you brought him up earlier, Paul, is that he lets defenders off the hook often and settles. I think that it's tough when you see games where he does that rip through move and just gets guys all in foul trouble and tied up, and then it goes games where you don't see him use that. But consistently, he's been passing out of the double team, which I've liked tremendously. But I do feel like offensively, when he settles for that turnaround jumper, even though he can hit it, it's such a low percentage shot. And Draymond brought up the point, like, if I'm guarding him and he goes for the jump shot, I'm like, well, okay, shoot it all day, because I much rather that than you abuse me in the paint and one foul trouble, you know, whatever it may be, because he's so clever with the basketball in the post.
Yeah, like I said, to me, there are valid points there, especially a guy like Draymond, who I take his thoughts, you know, his very opinion, seriously, right, as a guy,
yeah,
who is playing right now and who is an excellent defensive basketball player. So his opinion to me carries a lot of weight in this regard. But it's the timing of the conversation is just odd to me, because he has been so good, right, in that regard, in the bubble of wanting to get to the floor. And I thought, see, this is the reason why the game against the Magic was so encouraging to me, is because all the things you just said, Danny, about settling and taking fadeaways and all that, he did that in the first half. He was 3 of 8, and Vucevic plays him. Here's what Vucevic does. He's strong, he's smart, he positions himself well, and he doesn't foul. So that's – look at all the guys who Embiid struggles against. You know, Marc Gasol, those are the kind of guys that he doesn't do well against, guys that are strong and guys that are smart and don't commit fouls. Those are the guys that give him fits. What I love, though, was second half, Joel said, all right, done, we're not doing this. Third, he took 8 free throws in the third quarter alone, had 12 points. That was, to me, of all the encouraging things, that might have been the most encouraging thing I've seen, because we've seen it. We've seen where he does have those issues in the first half, and instead of coming out in the third quarter on fire, he kind of sulks and just keeps doing it. And so, to me, it was so encouraging to see that he said, no, I'm not settling. I'm going right at Vucevic, and he did it. And he drew fouls against a guy who is a solid post defender. So, to me, that might have been one of the most encouraging signs I've seen through 4 games in the entire team.
I agree with how hard he came out in the third quarter, getting to the foul line and just not settling for jumpers. Back to the Draymond criticism. It's 2 things that popped into my mind, and one of them is because I spend too much time on social media. Do we think Draymond was recruiting Embiid for the future? 1. 2, do you think Draymond was really, even though he was talking about Embiid not playing bully ball down in the post, do you think he's really more, those comments were directed at Brett Brown and the coaching staff in the front office for not surrounding him with players that he's not able to just pound it down there, since they got a bunch of guys that can't shoot?
Well, it would be very tough for the Warriors to make that work, because I'm trying to think of what money they could – I guess theoretically they could do like a sign – like they could make it work financially because they have the cap space. But my thing is, I don't know what you would give – I don't know what on earth – the Warriors have that they would give the Sixers that they would want, other than like freaking Klay Thompson, which ain't gonna happen.
I hear you on that, but I don't think Draymond knows the finances behind these things, and I don't think that's stopping him from trying to recruit.
It sounded like he was definitely trying to recruit Devin Booker, that's for damn sure. You heard that. I mean, that definitely sounded like, that probably is tampering. You're probably gonna get hit for that, Draymond.
Right. An interesting thing of Joel is that he becomes a prisoner of his own game sometimes, in that when he hits one of those fadeaways or a pull-up three or something like that, like, he's going to try another one. And he's going to probably try to shoot himself out of it if he misses. You know what I'm saying? So he sometimes not even settles for the jump shot. He lets – I mentioned this before. He lets the defender off the hook by just shooting it early in the clock or, you know, before he can, you know, wait for the double team or what have you. But – I mentioned him passing out of the double teams. And, man, Joel is such an easy player for me to know how he's feeling and how he feels about the game, because his body language, to me, gives him away so much. It gave him away a lot in that Shake game where they got into an argument, because you could see it building up even before the actual blow-up happened. And since then, his body language has been terrific. Like, I just see him engaged in every little, you know, little bunny that he might miss, or a rebound that didn't quite come his way, or you can see him thinking the game, like mistakes he made and things like that. So, like, when I look at Joel and, you know, when the double teams come and he's uncomfortable but still holds the ball and makes the right pass, like, it's easier to see his rhythm that way for me. But, I mean, I just look at it like Draymond – it has defended all these guys. He's played, you know, against Devin Booker, sees how great he is, sees how great Joel is, from regular season to the All-Star game. So I look at his criticisms and I'm like, he has some great points. I do think, though, that he's a little off base in the fact that, like, Joel is just, like, figuring some things out, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's still young in the game. Like, he didn't, you know, play, you know, at, like, Michigan State and, like, have, like, you know, a hard way to go coming up and learn things on the fly. Like, he's playing off a lot of talent. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not quite the same comparison. But I don't think he's recruiting, though, because I don't think Joel will ever leave Philly unless he had to. I just see him as wanting his own thing. And I think that's what he values the most, is that he can build something and be, like, the center of attention. Not necessarily that he's a narcissist, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I think it goes back, you know, what you were talking about before is, like, just the timing being so odd for all the criticism, because I think he's arguably playing some of the best basketball he's ever played, and he looks, to your point, Danny, really focused, really engaged, really locked in on what's happening, handling double teams better than I've ever seen him handle double teams since he's been here. And, yeah, to me, just the timing is very peculiar for there to be a Joel Embiid bash fest on the TNT halftime show. It just seemed odd to me. Obviously, didn't have a great first half in this one, but, like, I don't know. It just seemed poor.
I didn't think of it as a bash fest. I thought that, as I mentioned earlier, the criticism, it seemed like it was more directed at the coaching staff and the front office. Although it was subliminal. Because Joel, yes, playing some great basketball right now, should be down in the paint more, should be bullying people around more. So that's what I thought when I heard Draymond say it, that it might have been directed at how the team is constructed. But maybe I'm biased, and I got, you know,
blind. Here's the biggest thing I'm concerned about.
So when I hear
about
this construction.
Think about this. You got Ben. Who knows what's going to happen with him, right? He could be back. He might not be back. You have the Sixers go out against a team that they can destroy, don't have a chance to push some, you know, good energy out there for people to latch on to try to give themselves a shot in the arm if Ben's not there and they could play down to their competition. That probably concerns me the most, because the reason for optimism continues to shrink. You know, you got guys like Ben falling by the wayside, injuries creeping up. This starting lineup, even with Ben in there, the new look starting lineup with Ben and Shake, they played less than five games together. Like, there's not even anything to draw upon when it comes from if Ben comes back, because they haven't played enough together to be able to have, like, a camaraderie. You know, they were just getting to know each other. So that probably concerns me the most.
NBC Universal has something new for you. Peacock. The new streaming service that has all the best TV shows, including 30 Rock, Law & Order SVU, as well as Parks and Rec. plus great movies, including one of my favorites, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Peacock is the exclusive home for all of NBC Sports' free Premier League coverage, In Deep with Ryan Lochte and Lost Speedways, hosted by Dale Earnhardt Jr. Learn more at peacocktv.com.
Well, I mean, it's either way, it's not good, right? I mean, either – obviously, you want Ben Simmons to play because he's so good and you want him in the lineup. But either he's not going to play, so that's bad because he's so good, or it's not good because he's coming back, like you said, with no continuity with the guys that are in the starting lineup now. So, and it's just a shit. Like, other than saying they're cursed, which sounds ridiculous, but like Jesus, like at this point, like every year, it's Joel's hurt going in the playoffs. Now Ben's hurt going in the play. Like it's insane that this team kind of can't catch a break in regards to that. Like it's always something going into the playoffs in each year that they've done it together.
I can hear the process naysayers, Ben. They would say that because you went against the grain and lost on purpose, that this is the result of it. That's what the process naysayers would say. I'm just speaking for the people out there. I'm just speaking for the people. Don't throw your head back at me. Don't throw your head back. That's what they say. Am I wrong? There's a price to pay.
That's what they say for the tanking. Come on, it's
there's
not
a price to pay for the tanking. That's what they say. Ben's trying to talk, but he's muted, so he doesn't know. We should just let him go.
Anti-processors that I know aren't saying this is karma or anything like that. They are saying this is our culture of losing. The Sixers have a culture of losing. It's not built on anything else but losing. So, I don't know.
Are you an anti-processor?
I'm a win guy. Win by all means. I wasn't a fan of how it happened at the time. I know
losing by winning. You lose to win. So you're for it then?
No. Even though I wasn't a Kobe fan, I believe in giving your all every time you're out there on the court, on the field, or whatever. I know tanking
those
has worked
bums
on some
were
teams.
Giving their all.
Those players, yeah, I was going to say, you try to tell me that Jakar Sampson wasn't giving his all out there?
No,
I know he was.
Alexi Schmidt. That's
Tony Roten. You're going to tell me Tony Roten wasn't trying to ball out there?
The players were. And anytime someone seemed like they were playing too hard, they got put at the end of the pine or sit somewhere else.
That's not bro, true.
Don't talk about Henry Sims like that.
Wait.
Don't talk about Henry Sims like
don't
that.
Don't ruin my narrative.
It
worked for the Cubs and the Astros in baseball and, you know, some sign stealing for the Astros. Try to win. I know if you're in that, the fifth through eighth seed or in the NBA, like you're just in middling no man's land because you're not bad enough to get better, but you're not
getting a six seed now.
So after 8 years, we're in the same spot.
But that's not – no. It's not true. It's not true. It's not true, though, because they're not in the same spot.
No.
They're not in the same spot. But
they had won 50 games in back-to-back seasons and advanced to the second round of the playoffs in God knows how long.
And they definitely hadn't signed free agents of this caliber or traded for people.
No, exactly. They haven't had a start. They haven't had a player like any – like. It's the most exciting era of Sixers basketball since Allen Iverson, and it's the most successful. And it's the most successful era of Sixers basketball since the '80s. It mathematically is like that's a fact.
Oh, that's true. And what do we have to show for it?
So the point is, the process.
It don't matter if you don't have
got
anything
them
to show
better.
For it. It doesn't matter if you don't have anything to
they
show for.
They got better, so you can't say they don't have anything to show for it. They got better.
They don't
They're
have any,
better
anymore. Larry O'Brien trophies down at the Wells Fargo?
That's the ultimate goal. That doesn't mean they didn't get better. They're in a better spot now than they
MVPs?
Were 10 years ago.
Any coach? Yo.
You got a defensive player of the year candidate.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
Candidate. Got a chance to win.
You got a couple of rookie of the years in there.
You have a couple of rookie of the years in there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There we go.
I think it's one, but okay. Oh, we count Michael Carter Williams. Is he still in the league? He's in Orlando.
We got Ben.
Could have been Embiid if he played more than 30 games.
Yeah.
Who is the who is the rotation if everyone is healthy except Ben? Who are you happy with coming off the bench? Al's in the starting lineup. Who were your three guys?
So
if Brett said he's shrinking at the nine, who were the three guys?
Well, it would be four guys, right?
I mean, four guys. I'm sorry. I can't count.
Danny can't count.
It's okay. It's fine, Danny. No, none of this matters. Alec Burks has got to be a guy that gets – to me, I think he's proven now, to your point, Danny, he has earned the minutes in competition to where he should be at the front of the line there. I think – when Glenn Robinson III is healthy, I want to see what he can do. I want to see him get some minutes.
He was playing well.
And I think
a fluky collision, and he would still be right out there if not for that.
And you know what it is, Danny? I like guys who just – I think he's like a little things guy, and he's just like a dirty work type of guy. And they don't really have that. Like, for them, James Ennis was that guy last year. And you saw he did some of that for the Magic on Friday night. So, but I think Glenn Robinson can be that guy, but I think he's more athletic. I think he's more skilled than James Ennis because I think he's a better shooter, and I think he could do a little bit more. But, yeah, so I think those two guys – listen, Elton Brand traded for those guys for a reason. So, I mean, to me, they're the two guys. Matisse is number three and Furkan's number four. That's the way – to me, that's – if I'm going hierarchy of guys I like and I'm ranking them, that's what I'm giving you. Those are the next four guys, and that's how I see them.
So, Paul, you went Burks, Robinson, Matisse, Furkan?
Yes.
So, I don't want to agree with you because that's how I have it. So, I don't want to say the same thing you just said because that would make a boring pot.
I'm smart and I just know things. To agree with me sometimes.
He drinks and he knows things.
My guys off the bench is going to be a rotation to make people's heads explode.
Bro, don't be weird. Just say it's okay if you agree, bro. It's okay, man.
No. Because I know if Furkan's the first person off the bench, Amy might choke somebody.
Well, he's just in the rotation, I think.
So, you know what? Furkan's my first guy off the bench. Brett Brown is going out there. He's going left field. I think Furkan's going to come in with a hot hand. Shoot the lights out. After that, let's go a little Kyle O'Quinn. Get a little big man.
For the record.
My boy missing COVID tests.
Yeah, for the record.
My boy Kyle missing COVID tests.
I have to go back to this. Even though Furkan was the first guy off the bench tonight, and he is often, tonight he played 17 minutes. Dylo played 21. Burks played 28. So just because he's the first guy does not mean he's the sixth man best player. It's not what it means. It just means for lineup-wise, for matchup-wise, he is the next guy because what happens is he comes in for Joel Embiid, Al Horford shifts to the five. That's it. No need to look into any further into it.
Paul, you want to ruin any other fun with logic?
He's level-headed, man.
A fun ruiner.
That's what he does. He can't help but be level-headed. He's just who he is.
Do you sit in Spider-Man movies and say why him swinging wouldn't make any scientific sense?
That's why I love the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight movies, man, because he is the most realistic way to do it of all superhero movies. That's why
Paul out here watching Interstellar talk about, man, that's against the laws of physics.
Paul's all for the billionaire playboy philanthropist. He can get that vision. He got that vision. Let's hear your vision for what's happening on the site, Paul. Any pieces you're working on, anything coming down the pipe?
So for me, I knocked out the observations tonight just on the game and a lot of what we talked about and some other stuff there. And again, to me, it's something that's kind of gone lost in the shuffle. Shake Milton, eight assists, one turnover. I mean, you can't really ask for much more from a starting point guard. That's a pretty damn good night. And I thought he was pretty good defensively. Augustine had a big third quarter, but pretty solid from that element as well. And then also Noah Levick is going to work on a piece a little bit more in depth about Alec Burks and kind of to some of your points, Danny, why this is kind of now his time and why now for Alec Burks and what he could provide them going forward.
Real quick, I wanted to ask y'all this. What are the likelihood you think Burks or Glenn Robinson III sticks around both on one of your deals?
I don't think either guy's back.
Okay. Zero. Absolutely not happening.
They had to come back for the minimum, and they're not going to do that. They're both, they've both proven to be good, decent rotational players. So
I mean, you got guys like Ish Smith. I mean, he signed for like 2 years with the Wizards. I mean, they might want to do something like that.
I don't think Ish is even making the minimum. And with all due respect to Ish, both of those guys provide something more valuable than Ish. Like, they're
actually,
to me, they are rotational bench players that can help a team. And I, you know, I can't imagine either one of them signing for the minimum.
Actually, I want to say it's zero, as me and Paul stated. But with the salary and all that being up in the air, maybe it's a possibility. Because that's wild card that none of us know about yet.
Because this season ends in October, and the next one starts in December. So it won't be a big free agent period like we're used to. But hey, we appreciate you guys listening as always. For the level-headed one, Paul Hudrick, and for our producer slash co-host slash mustacheless wonder, Ben Berry, I'm Danny Palmels. Black Lives Matter. We'll see you next time.